I had to disconnect emotionally from that because I couldn't take it. I personally couldn't take that type of thing, and obviously that's why I was using heroin and whatever else I could get hold of. But the experience itself is revolting. I would go to, as far as say, absolutely revolting. And I tried to make it as surface-like as possible, as unfeeling as possible, that this was just an act. It went no deeper than the body, and it certainly did not affect my emotions. That's how I perceived and believed the act to be at the time. Although, obviously, on hindsight, I know that it touched me on a much deeper level than just the surface level. Because at that time, I just thought I was a body. And I tried to be unemotional about it. Although in reality, I wasn't able to do that. The reality about it is that it did have emotions attached to it simply because I'm a human being. And I got to loathe those men, loathe them. In fact, when I finished that work, I had a real problem with hatred for men. I really hated them. It's a very difficult thing to live that kind of life and not feel really deep feelings about it. And in order for me to cope with it, I had to numb myself in some way because the feelings were so horrendous. I mean, I already had low self-worth and I felt totally unloved, totally worthless. And this just, I just felt like I was nothing. I didn't want to be. I don't know how to explain it. I didn't want to be. I didn't want to exist. I didn't want to be. The emotions that I felt inside, I remember that they were just so painful. They were just so painful. I knew I was either going to kill myself or... But once I tried heroin and it numbed the emotions, just in the same way as heroin numbs pain, it also numbs the emotions. And I thought I'd found the cure to this lifestyle I seemingly was in. It was my way of dealing with these intense emotions I felt. I couldn't deal with them any other way.
Okay, we'll stop here.
I was dying.
Okay, I'm going to hand over to Sue. I wanted you to all just, we're going to have a few more clips throughout the day because I want to keep the women at the heart of what we're doing, okay? Mm. So we'll just keep showing little clippets in between what we're doing, but big welcome to Sue who's going to come in.
Just to put it into perspective, it might be numbers of women in prostitution. The number of newly diagnosed sexually transmitted infections has stabilised over the last 2 years, but there's trends such as increasing antimicrobial resistance infections are really concerning. So I'll mention that again in a minute. And still, most diagnoses of STIs are in the younger people, but we have seen, interestingly, shifts every now and then, like older women who sort of has, it's always interesting in the whole social perspective as things change and as it became more okay for older women to be having sex with different, more than one partner. And because they weren't brought up in thinking that they'd not been in a position of having to use condoms and things. So there's been a time when there has been a higher rise in older women. Again, all to do with perceptions and the whole sociological thing. So they're always working a bit behind the figures. But in 2017, there were approximately 420,000 new diagnoses of STIs in England, around the same number that were reported in 2016. And then it was really just the recent trends. 7,137 diagnoses of syphilis reported in 2017. Now that's a 20% increase relative to 2016 and around 150% increase relative to 2008. So that's been one of the things where actually there's been a huge increase because it was so small. We wiped it out of this country. You know, women, whenever they got pregnant for many, many, many years, have a test for syphilis. And in that way, it'd be completely, you didn't see it. I mean, as a nurse training 40 years ago, you don't see syphilis. Now you're starting to see congenital syphilis again because of the rate, the rise in the infection. It's been brought in from other countries and, of course, proliferated by sexual practices. 44,676 diagnoses of gonorrhea in 2017, which was a 22% increase relative to 2016, and a 200% increase relative to 2008. So it has levelled off a bit, but we, in just a very short time, you know, not very long ago, it's been a huge, huge increase. And what is really alarming is the emergence of antimicrobial resistance, especially to gonorrhea.
What does that mean?
Sorry?
What does that mean?
Okay, so I'm kind of saying this because I didn't know which bit to do first. I want to ask you what you know about STI. So, but basically, gonorrhea is something that can be treated with antibiotics.
Okay.
So, and I mean, we've got a problem worldwide with antibiotics. Generally, it's been in the newspaper this week again about chest infections and things, urinary infections. So, because people have abused antibiotics. Medical professionals have abused antibiotics. You can buy them online, you know, people, men or anybody goes and has sex and, oh, I'll just go and buy a tablet. Especially in other countries, they just walk into a pharmacy, I'll just have sex, so I'll get an antibiotic just in case.
Yeah.
And when you don't need it, then this, and or if like when people have a course of antibiotics that they don't finish, you hear about these, this is when how these super bugs develop, because they develop a resistance to, you know, all bugs have specific sensitivities to specific antibiotics. So basically, well, everything's a bit of a mess, but especially worrying for STIs as well. So just shout out to me what STIs you know. I've mentioned a couple
HIV.
Already.
HIV.
Somebody said herpes. I'm going to put. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, what's the one that you
could put? Gonorrhea.
I've just mentioned, I'll just put GC for sure.
Like A, B, and C.
Hepatitis.
The shot.
Great. Yeah, anything else? I mentioned one.
Syphilis,
yeah. Get me this time, I don't miss
you. Oh, what's the one?
HPV.
HPV.
Human
papillomavirus.
Yeah. I have a point to the body part to remember.
Okay.
HPV.
Human papillomavirus.
Yes.
It's the one you can get the.
Yeah.
Well, there's different.
Yeah.
Won't, not got time to go into
that,
but
there's
different
another,
types. There's ones where you get genital warts, but there's other types that are responsible for cervical cancer, which you know, and there's vaccinations now for those two things.
Yeah.
So, warts, herpes, there's something called trichomonas.
Isn't there one too that's like little fleas or
there's cubic lice,
yeah.
There's also scabies.
Scabies.
Is scabies an STI?
No, I put it there because it does. It's a bit like it. You could do because of close body contact, but no, anyone can get scabies. It's a body contact thing. There's something now called mycoplasma.
What's that?
Well, that's another. Right, I'm going to just. Hang on, I'll come back to that.
Candidiasis?
Say again?
Candidiasis?
Oh, good, I'm glad you said that. I'm going to put thrush because that's what people mostly know that as.
Yeah.
And there's another vaginal infection called bacterial vaginosis, BV. Okay, so Those are bacteria, those are vaginal infections. Anybody can get thrush, anybody can get bacterial vaginosis, and very much just a condition where it's just an overgrowth of those of the yeast organism or another organism that causes BV in a vagina. So that's the importance of vagina health, which I'll tell you about another day. So the reason I put those in the group is because they all can be treated, they're all bacteria, okay? So that's where the antibiotics come in. What do you think these are?
A virus.
They're a virus.
Yeah.
So exactly. And that's sort of, should have gone down there really as well. Okay, so, and lice, there's different types of lice. You get your head lice, which is rife in schools at the moment. And you just get picked, and then, do you know what these crabs? And do you know why? Because they're really cute. They look just they look like crabs. They've got little pincers, and they look like, as opposed to head lice.
Cute.
It's
funny.
Symptoms, unless actually you specifically go for an STI, you're not going to actually understand.
Yeah. So that's the key. I mean, any of them, you're not always going to, I mean, probably if you're itching and scratching, because both scabies is a little mite that burrows under the skin, and then it's sort of what it excretes and that causes irritation.
But you get sores and,
I mean, a lot of rough sleepers, it's more linked with hygiene as well, but anybody can get them, and that's the whole point. With all of these things, it's not to, you know, anybody can get them, and you can't tell by looking at people whether they've got them. And as regards symptoms, yes, there are some, but that's the biggest mistake people make. They come in and they say, oh, I haven't got anything because I've not, you know, not got any symptoms. Or they come in saying, I've been feeling sick, or I've been having flu, because they've read some symptoms, so they think they've got something. But you assume that for most things you won't get symptoms, so you have to test to find out. So that's that.
Do they test for all of them? In the US, they don't test for herpes when you go in.
No, this country, in an ordinary sexual health clinic. That's why you do a sexual history, because it's relevant to people's sexual practices. But a basic sexual health screen would be blood test for HIV and syphilis, and a vaginal swab for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and a urine we usually do for chlamydia, gonorrhea in men, simply because the tests are, they're better. I don't understand the microbiology, but more sensitive, yes. So men usually do the urine. So that's a basic one. It will then depend on people's sexual practice, sexual history, as to whether they're at risk of the hepatitis. Warts, you don't test for. And again, that's a common mistake. People have been told they've had a free sexual screen, and then they're really upset when they've got herpes or warts. Because you don't test for warts, you just see them. There's about 100 different types of warts that cause all different, you know, verrucas and warts on your hands and all different types. Herpes, you can do a test, but we don't do it because it doesn't really tell you anything. Because loads of people carry the virus, like they do the wart virus, but they never have any problems. Herpes is the thing people get most upset about often, and I think it's to do with this, why I put them separate, is that you tell someone they've got chlamydia or gonorrhea for the third time and they don't bat an eyelid because they know you're going to hand them some medicine and it's going to go away, although things are changing. Whereas with herpes, that can recur. So you can shift, you know, you can rid your body of the virus, but it can just stay, and that's little sores that come up of a varying degree, but then they can go, they have a sort of lifespan, they can go, but then 2 months later, 6 months later, a year later. For some people it's every month, they get an outbreak and they can be really painful. So they are just a pain, but they don't do you any harm. And the only time that you need to worry about herpes if they were pregnant, and if in the last end of the pregnancy, you wouldn't want a baby born if you got an outbreak, because that could cause complications for the baby. So warts, herpes, people get very upset about. Warts we only get rid of because it, for the pure aesthetics of it. Although having said that, if you do believe somebody could have one or two warts for a year and they never get any bigger or grow, other people could have, in the course of literally 2 weeks, can be have quite a lot of warts. And at lunchtime there's some pictures here. You can
look
at.
Well, they are gross, I can tell you, they're really gross.
Hepatitis, A, B and C, again, it depends what people are doing as to, a hep A is the one, do you know what you get, where you get that hep A from? It's food, because that's in dirty water, you know, that's the one you often have vaccinated when you go and travel vaccine, isn't it?
Yes, when you're in a farm or something like that.
It's really because it's
in a foreign country,
where you get contaminated water, so like fecal matter into water, or if people haven't washed their hands, that kind of thing. So that's but that's become, again, depending what people do for their sexual practices, if there's mouth to anus contact, then you run the risk of that. So a lot of people won't, you know, you won't even think about that. But certainly, men have sex with men is a group that we think about. Hepatitis B, do you know what that is?
That's from needles.
Because it's bloodborne. Yeah. I mean, they're all in the blood, because that's bloodborne, it's very common in certain parts of the country. So anybody can get that, and often that's passed on from mother to baby. But again, we have got vaccination programmes. But Hep B is probably the most easily passed on. Okay, it can get in through a paper cut. So you know, when you think about wearing gloves and that, it's more for Hep B, not HIV. That's not easily passed on at all. Just in everyday living. But Hep B, and people either get very ill with it and they die, or they get ill with it and form antibodies.
Antibodies. Yeah.
And sometimes the people that then carry a Hep B virus, years down the line, it can cause problems with cirrhosis of the liver, cancer of the liver. So it can have, but that's fairly small. So, but again, you see, there's no cure. There are drugs now that can help people. So again, it's important if somebody does carry it, they know they've got it, so they can be monitored. Hep C is much more related to if there's drug use involved, intravenous drug use. Mm-hmm. And again, because when people inject drugs, they don't just inject it, they'll draw the needle up and plunger up and down, so there's more blood going. If they're then sharing their syringe and their needles and whatever. Yeah. Okay. So just going back, running through them then. So chlamydia, absolutely right, Penny. That they in press, you see it termed the silent killer and that, but I think it's, you just say any of them can have no symptoms. Do you know what chlamydia can cause?
Infertility.
Yeah, big one, infertility. You get the infection if it's travelled up to the fallopian tubes, it blocks the fallopian tubes, and if it will be healed, it can heal on its own, even any bacterial infection can, but you're left with a scar, you know, just like if you fall over and you've got a scar. And if you think the fallopian tube is like the inside of a biro, you know, the little thin tube, it doesn't take much to block it. And the same thing with gonorrhea as well. So some people aren't very aware of, chlamydia can actually give a type of arthritis. It's not common, but it is possible. Quite a nasty, sort of severe pain in the joints and things. And so can gonorrhea as well. And again, that can cause infertility. Men often can be doing gonorrhea, particularly gonorrhea can cause swelling and pain in the testicles. And it potentially can cause infertility for men as well. Not to the same extent as women. Racing on to the time. Talked about that.
What about throat spots? Because I had a question from a girl who messaged about throat spots. Is that a standard thing that you can get in sexual health clinics, or is that something?
You certainly can get them, and it just, again, that's why, you know, somebody coming in, when did you last have sex? Mm. What sort of sex? Who was it with? So it would, yeah, and we do see quite a lot of gonorrhea and chlamydia in the throat. So it's less likely, and certainly HIV, but because I'm going to have to stop soon, aren't I? But I'll say a lot more about that. But no, they're, yeah, certainly do throat swabs. And, you know, again, anal sex as well, so there's rectal swabs as well.
Do you think that relies in certain of the, especially the, do you think that the increase in identification of STIs has increased in certain age groups? Because certain age groups, especially teenagers, are now, it's much more proactive for them just to go to the STI clinic. It's like with our kids, we routinely, they get STI, we try and get them to go to STIs, and it's coming out more in schools and secondary schools, it's promoted more, that it's a safe place, etc.
Yes. But there's just a huge, because if you look at the, yeah, that's a huge part, and obviously that's what the aim is, but I spend my days trying to tell, talking to people, saying, actually think about testing doesn't stop you getting the infections. No, you're right, but I just think if you think about, actually there is, I mean, there is more sex going on than there was a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, because you've only got to think how in your face it all is. Yeah. But you're right, I mean, people...
And acceptance, again, especially young people, it's like, it's wrong, but it's societal.
Yeah, so that's, again, it's kind of runs in line almost with the prostitution.
Yeah.
There's lots of similar things, which, again, I keep fighting for, because you might know now that there's been, over the last year, we're doing trials for giving people who are at risk of HIV something called PrEP, so pre-exposure treatment, because HIV is a virus, as you know, but it's not the death sentence it was years ago. But I would say to people, so if you've got it, you need to know. If you don't know you've got it, you will die from it. But if you've got it, you can live a very healthy, you know, you have to be positive, but actually isn't it better not to get it in the first place? But now, and you can buy them online, you get these drugs that they use to treat HIV, so that if you're going out and having sex with people you meet on your app, you know, oh, he's over there, right, I'll go and have sex with him, then you can just be taking this, so you've got some risk, you don't have the risk of HIV. And this is sort of being, there's in, within, like you have the two factions in the polarisation in the prostitution, you know, there's people saying, but actually, we're going to see a rise again in gonorrhea and things, because it's just encouraging people to go out and have protected sex.
Yeah.
Not going to get HIV, but... You know, so that's the argument there, and I think I'll have to stop. I hope that's given you a bit of information.
And in the context of this, thank you, Sue. That's a round of applause. The context of this, obviously, is you being aware, because you are, by nature, in being involved in street bite, we are having more contact with a group in society who are at much higher risk of getting any of these. Okay, so the women, the men we don't really have a lot of contact with, but we use this. Do you want to pass them the picture down, or are you going to leave it?
I'll put that on the time.
We use this on the You Choose course with the men, and I think this section is probably the number one reason why out of 46 men, only two have reoffended.
Yeah.
So it's purely selfish on their part, because they have no idea. Most of them have got no idea at all. And of course, we show them pictures of their penis and what it looks like when it's full of warts or whatever. We make it very, very hard hitting to, you don't want to be doing this. And it is a shock moment, isn't it?
But so what, again, 2 seconds, but thinking about transmission, because I think that's important again as well, because some people get really worried about, you know, you can't get any of these infections from touching, ordinary kissing, hugging, cutlery, toilet seats, a great myth what you get off toilet seats. You don't get things off toilet seats.
You don't get crowds off toilet seats,
no.
They don't jump 6 feet.
Oh, I'm just going to say the same. I saw that once on the toilet door.
But obviously what we do say to the guys is, you know, if you're having sex on the back seat of your taxi, because you're a taxi driver or an Uber driver, you get your children in that car, presumably, later on. So you're not only are you exposed to it, but what about your wife and your children who are going to sit in that car? Are you happy about that? So of course it really makes them think. Again, another round of applause for Sue. So you haven't got your back. Is someone got a tissue or is that
the that spongy thing?
Great. Right, we are going to move swiftly on.
I should use this pen if you don't have sex.
Yeah, those are highlighters.
Yeah, which are you?
That's not really the one that I'm using.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look. Pull this over here. And we're going to look at something called... daytime... support. Okay, and what I want to do is talk you, okay, if I can, we're going to talk through what daytime support looks like. Okay, we've got till 12:15 when we're going to stop for lunch. I want to make this as interactive as possible, but what to do is describe to you the process for us as Streetlight of what it looks like with the women. Okay, so it's important that we're all on board and we all know that. Most of you will have some idea of outreach, particularly the Sussex team, in terms of what we do on outreach. But increasingly, we want more and more daytime support. We currently have daytime support with 3 women ongoing. And we have had daytime support with others over the years, but we've got 3 ongoing at the moment. So when we've done the raid with the police, and we've had a self-referral, or we've met someone on the street and they've connected with us, and they say, yes, I want to connect with Streetlight, what happens? This is the question. This is what daytime support is about. What happens? What are we going to do with those women? Okay, so we have a process. That process starts with... various things. It starts with outreach recording. Okay, so the first time we meet with that woman, we'll go and have a coffee with her in the coffee shop.
Sorry,
yes. We'll have a coffee, probably 2 of us, team leader and maybe another volunteer, sometimes 1 person, depending on the nature of how we've met that woman. Ideally, the 2 of us, okay? And we use our outreach recording forms, and on that we just basically put down where we met, who we met with, what happened, and what the next steps. If that leads to another, so that's number 1. If that leads to another interaction, which we really hope it does, we have probably had about 30 of these. We've probably had at least 30 women that we've had an initial coffee with, initial whatever. And not through any fault of our own, but just where the women are at, where their circumstances are, that's all they needed, that's all they wanted. But what we want is it to move on to number 2. So what happens the next time we meet them? The next time we meet them, we take various things. We take, importantly, confidentiality. One of the women that we've seen in London at the moment, one of the things that she said, we were just talking about this on the train, was one of the reasons that she will open up to Streetlight and not to her other counsellor is because she doesn't feel judged. So confidentiality, we have a confidentiality form that we fill in which says, whatever you say to us, we're not going to breach that confidence, except in these circumstances, and we get her to agree what those circumstances are. Okay, so we immediately build trust. So we fill in that. This is all on the second occasion. Then we will also fill in a risk assessment. And we do this with the woman, okay? A risk assessment form, which is combined within the confidentiality and a support plan.
Are these all just in English?
They are, but again, in terms of other languages, that's an issue more here in London. It does happen out on the, we use Google Translate out the live operations. And yeah, I mean, I know Alina, you've got Bulgarian or Romanian?
Okay.
Bulgarian. So where there is a language issue, then we look at that. So it's a really valid point. So the support plan then comes into play. Okay, so, and actually I've missed before that up here. They all happen at the same time, but you will also have a referral form, and that can be there or there. So the referral is the form that can come from the police, we get them from social services, we get them from, we fill them in for women that have contacted and self-referred. So as soon as we've got details of a woman, we fill out that referral form, but we take that into stage two, because we want to be completely transparent with the women, okay? So all of that happens on number two, and that's important because it sets out and it helps the woman herself to tell us, what would you like? So we're not saying, this is who we are, this is what we want to do with you, this is what we've got for you, this is how we're going to rescue you, this is how we're going to help you. We're not saying any of that. We're saying, this is who we are, this is what we can offer, what would you like? What are the needs in your life? Mm-hmm. What are the risks in your life? How do we help you? What are the choices? So from, we've got number one, number two, hopefully that then leads to number three, four, five, and ongoing. Okay? And at these, at every one of these, we go back to outreach recording. So, oops. So we basically do outreach recording. So does that make sense?
Yes.
And that's the form. Outreach recording is like what you discussed.
Right. What I'm describing is documentation.
Okay.
Okay? Now, we all know that building trust doesn't come through a form.
Right?
It comes through relationship. The goal above all of this, of all of that, is trust and relationship. So that is where we are going. But the result of what we want, anyone know what we want down here?
Actually, for them to know Jesus and to actually have that healing from Jesus, but exiting prostitution.
Actually, yeah, it's the second one. It's actually the second one. It's exit.
It's exiting prostitution.
Support.
Yeah.
All right? We want these women, and that, for those of us that are Christian in the room, then that is what we feel God said to us is why Streetlight exists. We are not here to preach to them.
No.
We are not here to bring them to Jesus or anything like that. We are here to do this, to help these women come out of prostitution. Now, of course, for those who have faith, we want to see our faith impact the women. The very first brothel we went into, they asked us to pray for them without saying a word. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you know, that's there. But it's really important that we understand we are here. Success looks like this.
And it's long-term.
All right?
Exiting. And it's final exiting with that.
So support, exit support is the goal, okay, to help these women. And that's a long journey for some of them. It's also, what happens if one of these women at daytime support here, at any point here, says, do you know what, I'm going to carry on in prostitution.
And you carry on meeting with them on a weekly basis as you
know. What so if someone says that,
that's their voice.
Right, we are not going to be saying to them, well, I really don't think you should be doing that.
Unconditional positive.
But I'll tell you, in 20 years of working with women in prostitution, not once has a woman in it said to me, I don't want to get out. I don't want to stop doing this.
Oh, of course I love being accused every day. Of course they haven't. But there are some times when for women, financially or for different reasons, at that moment they are not ready. And, you know, there are layers, as we know, to this in terms of why they've ended up in on the streets or in a flat somewhere. There are layers of things in their lives that have led to that decision, okay? Now, as a Christian organisation, we surround the whole thing in prayer. Everything that we do comes out of our core conviction. And I always say, you know, I won't apologise for that because everyone has a core conviction. Everyone, whether you're a faith person or not, you have things that motivate you, whether it's a strong sense of injustice, maybe it's something you came out of yourself that you really don't want others to fall into, but that is your core conviction. Well, for those who are Christian, that just happens to be your core conviction. But so we don't ever need to apologise for that, but we do need to not put our core convictions on anyone else. No. Because Jesus himself didn't do that. He said, come and follow me. He didn't say, well, you better follow me, otherwise I'm not going to feed you. You know, only those that believe in me can feed at the 5,000. I'm only going to feed those who believe in me. No, he didn't say that. He just fed people. So that's the approach that we have. Okay, so what I'd like now is to throw out some more words. So if we can pop these around, and in the last 10 minutes, you can think about words. What are the words that you're going to use from step one with these women? What are the words that you're going to use? What words do we need to build this? If that's the primary thing that needs to happen to enable that. So in other words, we're not going to go in here, are we?
No.
Up here, we're not going to go to there. Unless the woman says, help me, get out. But even if she says that, we're still going to go here. Okay? So write down on your bits of paper what kind of words you think are going to be needed to build that trust and that relationship. There's no right or wrong here. This is an open thing. So let's write down some words that you think might enable that.
That we would say to the woman.
Yeah, how are you going to develop trust? What kind of things do you think you're going to need to say? If your team leader phones you up and says, I've got a referral, I've got someone, I can't see them, can you go and have a coffee with them? What words are you going to use? So write them down on bits of paper. We'll discuss it together in a minute.
Do you want us to put them up there?
And then you can come and start putting them up here. Okay? You can come and start just plopping them up there. Say, there's no right or wrong. This is just to get you thinking about what words are. Support. So let's say you've met this person here, let's call her Alice. Let's just make up a name. So we're meeting Alice, and we go and meet with Alice, and we want to go and talk to her about confidential support. Does that sound right?
Maybe not.
Beautiful, love, supported, valuable, heart, worthy, loved and cared for. This is a safe space. These are some things you put down, worthy. Let's have some feedback on those first. What about those words?
If you use the word love, if they don't understand, if they hear the word love all the time, they hear the word beautiful all the time, it depends on that person at that time. You cannot have a pro forma to say, here is your script, you must follow your script, because each woman is different.
Right,
and actually you need to listen.
Yeah, so we need to listen to each woman. Okay, I would say actually some of these words, some of these words here, like beautiful, love, worthy, heart, I think they're things that are going to come down here. Okay, if you go in with the first word saying, oh, I love you, or you're beautiful, or I think you're this, now it might be that they come within the conversation one word like that. Like, I would use a word that I would use, and I use a lot when I first meet someone, is the word brave. I will often say to a woman, thank you for meeting me, that's really brave of you.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know me. She's taken a step towards something that is a bit scary for her. So that's a good word, brave, okay? I think confidential support's good, but I think the support thing, I actually wouldn't use the word support. Why wouldn't I use the word support? Let's have some around, that's everyone.
To victimise her.
Right, bang on. If we go in saying, oh, I'm here to offer you support, we've immediately become the rescuer. Mm-hmm. And they've become the victim. Immediately. Whereas if we come in as a friend, and it's not a friend in the sense of like your best friend that you go for coffee with, but you come in as a supporter. So I would steer clear of the words like I'm here to support you. We would use that as a service, but we're talking about this when you're here. Something's already happened. We've had a referral. So we've had the referral come somehow. They've either emailed us or it's come through an agency. Something's happened where they've already agreed they want a support service, okay? So this now needs to become, all the language needs to become human. This is how we build the trust. So you'd words like, it's really brave.
But could you not say support in terms of we can support you with medical, with finding somewhere to go for health checks, or we can support you in finding this, rather than we are here to support you.
So it's the way that you, and that's good that you said that, Jessica, because I think that's what I want us to think about, because it's the way that we engage with the women that will build the trust. Okay.
And also perhaps they might think that you're just there to save them and they need to,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We want to avoid that. Yeah. Someone's put good to meet you. That's great. Yeah, let's stick that one over there. That's definitely good to meet you. This is a safe space, definitely. You want to create an environment. You want to, in your words, tell them, this is safe. Confidentiality, the top word of that, definitely. That's going to be my first conversation. But the confidentiality within the context of our, what that looks like for us. So I would say this is going to be confidential, and I'll talk to you next time we meet a bit more about that. And then the next time I'm going to bring the form and I'm going to talk them through it. And it has things like, we won't disclose without your permission, and actually we ask them to sign the confidentiality form, to give us permission. And to say that we won't share anything other than, and there'll be a list of things that they can say, no, I don't want you to talk to my doctor, I don't want you to talk to the police, I don't want you to, but that, you know, there's a, unless it's a, we put a caveat in, unless it's a safeguarding issue, and we talk that through, okay?
What else have we got? General chat as you would with any friend. What do we think about that?
It's different because we're befriend and not,
yeah,
not
friend.
Friend.
Not
so we do come from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Because it's not equal, although we want them to feel
it
very much, it's not an equal. We're not coming at it from
see,
here.
We didn't want to be formal,
haven't we? Who put that? Who was that?
So what I meant by that
right.
was maybe I just mean not like condescending or.
Right, okay. So being
maybe
more relaxed.
Yeah. So
okay.
Speaking just, you know, they're another human, they
yeah.
have life outside of what they're doing.
So that's the heart of
yeah.
So you can explain the heart. What we don't want to do, we're not just going to chat to them like we're a friend. Okay? Because you're there not as a friend, you're there as representing Streetlight, which is a professional service.
And they'll become attached so quickly.
Yes.
So they open up
yes.
and see you as a
yeah.
friend.
So you're never going to become a best friend with this person. I'm not saying that you won't build friendship and that that person's journey can't lead to genuine friendship, because I think it will, and I think it should actually as well, where it's really successful.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, to maybe see some of these girls come join us
mm-hmm.
in this room
yeah.
today.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be wonderful. But again, it's just getting you to think about how you view it when you spend time with them. This is a good one. Listen to them, repeating back what they have said, being their friend. Again, we can use the word friend, but it's in the context of a professional friend. Okay? But listen to them, repeating back what they've said. That's we for those of you who've done the listening training that we do, really important. When someone says to you, I feel really, really vulnerable. Oh, I'm sorry that you feel really vulnerable. You've immediately told them that you've hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very important listening skill is that you repeat back what you've heard.
Yeah.
But you don't
okay.
use the words, I'm sorry you feel really vulnerable, because then you're putting pity on them.
Sorry?
I wouldn't use the words, I'm sorry you feel really vulnerable. I would say you're feeling weird. You're really, really vulnerable. What does that look like for you? If you say I'm sorry, then you're putting pity on that person.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So yes. Opportunities to be listened to and accepted. Yep. Brilliant. Here to listen. Lots of you have got that. How are you? That's a good question, but that's the question. But it's an open question, but it's also a
toward.
Well, they could actually as well come up with a question like that, because it's quite a confrontative question. Is immediately asking them to be open and vulnerable. It's better to ask questions that don't put them in a vulnerable situation. What you want is their vulnerability to come out willingly. Can you see the reason why? How are you? For you and I, when you're in a relationship with something, it's easy to say that. But for these women, we know they're not okay, because they wouldn't be accessing our service if they were okay. So that's really important. Okay, we're running out of time. What else have we got here? Valued, no judgment, interested in them, definitely. Emotional support, trust, non-judgmental approach, freedom for expression. Again, emotional support. Okay, let's just talk about one more issue. Linked to emotional support and physical touch. How you're physically going to be. See, you might be very tactile. I am. I love hugging people. But in that scenario, I'm not going to walk in and hug this woman. We were out on the streets, who was it, me and Raquel, up in Enfield, and there was one of the street women broke down. At that moment, the police were with us, so I moved towards her and I touched her arm. That's most that I could do. Because she needed something. But I wouldn't have hugged her. That might be that somewhere on this journey, there's going to be a connection point. But I would say be really aware if she is getting very tactile with you, because that can be a sign of her getting a wrong dependency. Okay? And in these relationships that are being built, you always want to ask yourself the question, if I wasn't here, if I was removed,
Would this woman still trust Streetlight enough? Could someone else come in and just love on her, pick up and you know? And that's healthy in an organisation, okay? So that they see that their support they're receiving from you is coming from the whole backing of an organisation, okay? Why is this so important? We're going to finish with this.
You mean establishing relationships?
All of what I've been saying, and particularly that last point.
So everyone feels treated the same.
Yes, but it's also fundamentally, we don't want to be a broken promise for these women.
Yeah.
They've had trust broken so many times.
And they will push boundaries as well. They might not turn up to a meeting.
Yeah.
And are you going to book another one, or is that it then?
Yeah.
And then you're another person.
Yes, that's it. And you know, Josie and Kate and Penny, and actually not nearly all the room, you've got professional experience in this as well. So I guess what we're saying is bring that professional experience into what you do with Streetlight, but also with the compassion and our core convictions. Okay? I think we're going to need to pull some of those blinds down because it's getting really warm in here. So we are going to stop for lunch. Okay? We will start back. We've given half an hour. Can I just say, if you want to go and get a coffee or a tea, please do. Back in here with it. We want to spend time together because it's so limited. Sue has put some sandwiches and food and stuff together. So we'll lay all that out, but please do toilets and coffees and all of that. Okay? We're starting back at 1:45.